Good evening, one and all. Two things immediately prior to this year. The first is that I want to dedicate this year for Shlema, for Shoshana Elka Bat Etaldina, number one. Shavro for Shlema and all good things. Number two, I'd be really remiss if I didn't remind everybody that today's date is an important date in the history of the world and in the history of the Jewish people. Today is June 6, 1944. So it happens to be the 50th anniversary of the 1967 war. Some of you may remember that. And in addition to that, June 6, 1944, of course, is D-Day. 2,500 known U.S. casualties, 4% of which were Jews, because 4% of the U.S. Armed Forces in World War II were Jewish soldiers of all manner and variety. As you all know, Operation Overlord, D-Day, the invasion of Normandy, was the beginning of the end for Hitler, Yimach Shemo v'Zichro, and in some ways, of course, for us, it was too little too late, but at least it did end eventually the war, and you know, all the nefashot, Jew and Gentile, that lost their lives, they're all heroes to each and every one of us. So Yehi Zichram, it's their memory should be bound up in the eternal bonds of life. So we continue really with Pasuk Vav, but we can't do Pasuk Vav until we go back to Pasuk Hey. It's been about 3 weeks since we did the Megillah. So we're in Perek Zion, and we're in Pasuk Hey. Just as a review, so that we'll be able to go on to Pasuk Vav. So what happens is, so Yomer HaMelech Achashverosh Vomer Lester HaMalka, notice the very, very formal language, you know, full descriptions. Okay, it's the Melech Achashverosh, it's Esther, the Malka. Okay, and what does he ask her? Two questions: Mihu ze ve'eza hu, right? So the two questions really are two different questions altogether. It's not just sort of a restatement. Mi hu ze is a question of what's the identity of this individual who wishes to wreak harm against the Jewish people? Because if you just look at the last word of the prior pasuk, the first line of the prior pasuk, you see the word tsar. Okay, so that's, you know, of course, the enemy, the attacker. So now the question of Achashverosh to Esther is two-part. Mihuze, what's his identity? And Ezahu. Ezahu really, says the Malbim, is a different kind of question entirely. What would his reasoning be for desiring to wreak havoc against the Jewish people? So again, the first thing, question of identity. The second statement is, why? Madua, lama, okay? And that brings us to a brand new pasuk that we haven't done yet. That's pasuk vav. Okay, pasuk vav, Vatomer Esther. Now, I have to tell you that, of course, when we're learning the Megillah, the nuances I'm about to share with you aren't particularly clear. Because even though we have really initial, unbelievably good Megillah readings, honest to goodness, we do. I'm not saying that as a sarcastic. We really do. You still don't. You're not really living with the pasuk. It's a very quick sort of thing, even though it's said so beautifully. So I want to point something out to you. Vatomer Esther. Esther said, Tachashverosh. Ish. Okay, so ish, I think we'd all agree, is a neutral term. Okay, it's a matter of gender. Okay, we'll leave it at that. Now, then there's actually three different descriptions of Haman. Tsar, the Oyev, and obviously there's got to be a difference. between a tsar and an oyev. Tsar is, the active enemy, and oyev is passive. We're going to talk a little bit more about that in a minute. But ish tsar v'oyev haman. As if that wasn't enough, look at the third description. Hara. What does it mean to call Haman Hara? I'm going to be discussing it. Don't worry. Okay, Hazet. Now, Haman's reaction is something that, is quite expected. V'Haman Niv'at. Haman was terrified. Okay? He almost like, the word Niv'at, I think in other contexts, could mean almost like melted. So, those of you were, I think everyone here saw The Wizard of Oz. Right? I'm melting. Right? And that's basically what happened to Haman. V'Haman Niv'at. Milivnei HaMelech V'Hamalka. And he was terrified before the king and the queen. Okay. Now, let's go slowly here. Tsar Va'ayev, okay. Tsar, says the Malbim, means a person actively engaged. Okay? Unfortunately, we live at a time where, with all the terrorist attacks and so forth, you'll hear the active shooter or the active terrorist. So tsar means somebody who actually does injury, biadayim. Okay? Now, what is an oyev? What's an oyev? I'm sorry?
Can that be referenced to his sons?
No, it's interesting. Oyev is an enemy. The word oyvim, right? Like we have from the Shemone Esrei, oyvim would be enemies. But what kind of enemy? An oyev, says the Malbim, is not an active individual. Have any of you ever heard of the term, quote, higher anti-Semitism? Mm-hmm. Have you heard that term?
No.
Okay, it's interesting. There's two kinds of anti-Semitism. There's the anti-Semitism that brought, for example, the murder of Jews during the Crusades, in the Holocaust, mm-hmm. okay, in pogroms. That's active. That's the Tsar. Mm-hmm. That's the Tsar. And then there's the kind of anti-Semitism that said, and that's what the Oyev is, come to America in the 1950s and onward, okay, Jews can't join this country club. So we had our own country clubs, right? We all know Jews can't attend this camp. Okay, well, we created our own camps.
It was more subtle?
Yes, it's a more subtle kind of anti-Semitism. Except when these anti-Semites would talk to one another. And then they would say, but you do, you can imagine a play, a movie, well, you know that he's Jewish. Okay, and that's all that had to be said.
It's more subtle publicly.
Right. It's not a public demonstration, but it doesn't mean it isn't heinous. So it's, because what it is,
it's a cowardly way.
It's a cowardly, but it's a mind.
It's not violent.
Correct. It's a mindset.
But all those, like, quotas that wouldn't let you.
Absolutely.
But he can't be both. Either he's active or he's passive.
Ah.
Which is why I said that must be referring to the sons.
No, it's not. He's both. In other words, the Siba, okay? In other words, Mihuzeh, well, that's Haman Hara, okay? Ve'ezahu, and what's his reason? Oh. His reason is because he has this totally thoroughgoing part of his persona, part of his personality, hatred of the Jews. So even if he's not actively involved with murdering Jews, he hates us.
So and of course, Polish people or whatever who stood by while everything was
out. Correct. See, the Poles are very interesting people because the greatest number of people at Yad Vashem that are considered to be non-Jews, right? The tzaddikei Umot HaOlam, who saved Jews. There were 10,000 Poles who saved Jews.
So probably a greater population there than other
countries. It's a very large population.
So we don't know what percentage.
No, we don't know the population. If you just want, you know, I don't know what it is per capita, but you know, but you're right. The Poles, many of them didn't just, of course, stand by. They were active. Maybe no one as active as the French during the war. Absolutely the case. Absolutely the case. But yes, so that's the Tsar. They're chasing after us. They want to murder us, biyadayim, in hand. Okay? And then, of course, there's the Oyev, where that doesn't necessarily show. So, for example, Soloveitchik says that when he was in the University of Berlin, okay, he writes this. This is not making it up. He never experienced any anti-Semitism.
What years were that?
He was there in the 20s. Into the 30s when he left.
There was probably higher anti-Semitism. But
that's my point. That's my point.
It was a different kind of anti-Semitism. And also, I think because of his brilliance, outside of his religious stature, was amazing.
Right. I mean, to show you how much they were clueless about his religious standing... Okay, Rav Soloveitchik did his thesis on Hermann Cohen, who was also obviously Jewish. He was a neo-Kantian, as a follower of Kant, and then he took Kant's theories a little bit further, and he was from the 19th century as well. But when Rav Soloveitchik was defending his thesis at the University of Berlin, one of the professors asked him if he'd ever heard of Maimonides.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so had no, obviously had no idea, and was he familiar with Maimonides' philosophy, since it was defending a thesis in philosophy. But yeah, as Arlene said, but there was higher anti-Semitism, because Hitler, Yimach Shemo v'Zichro, did not create anti-Semitism, he just took something that was there and built on it. Okay, so that's what we recall. Again, the idea of Oyev, okay? A more or less a passive kind of enemy, but still there. In other words, denying full participation in society. That's what an Oyev would do. I think that would be a very good way to say it. Okay? Now, what does Haman Hara mean? So this is very interesting. I never, ever saw this in any Mefaresh, and I never thought about it until I was really deep, deep, deep in preparation. And I realized Haman Hara means that he, in at least the way Esther is presenting it, he exemplified and he was the embodiment of pure evil. Haman Hara. It's not that he just... See, the fact that he did evil, that's Tsar. The fact that he was evil, okay, you know, using a Star Wars metaphor, okay, he was totally from the dark side. Okay, that kind of idea. Okay? And then, of course, once all this came out, Haman Nivat Livnei Melech VaHamalka. Okay, because notice nobody stood up to support him. Mm-hmm. Right, the king didn't say, "Wait a minute, he's my Mishnah Lamelech." And why? Because the Malbim's already told us what?
He says that
he already knew it. Right, remember? He already knew the truth. Okay, now next Zion. Very strange lashon. Okay, let me just simply translate it for you. But again, I think you're going to find this in a very fascinating nuance, which again, I'm telling you straight. It was new to me when I discovered it. V'hamelech kam v'chamato. Okay, so in modern Hebrew, okay, if someone said, "Hu kam," what does "hu kam" mean?
He got up.
He got up. Okay, so let's translate it. Hamelech kam, the king got up. Mimishta Hayayin. Okay. Okay. From the drinking party. Okay. Almost really, isn't that absolutely unnecessary to tell me? I mean, this is the second party.
Well, maybe he was drinking out of disgust, or maybe he was drinking to, like, wash it all away.
Well, if you went all the way up to Pasuk Aleph, what did they do? Pasuk Aleph. V'yavo ha-melech v'aman l'shtot im Esther ha-malkah. So, of course, he's at a mishteh. Right?
Excuse me, in Bechama so?
Right. Well, where? Yeah, Bechama to, I didn't get to yet. You're right.
I'm sorry.
So, no. Thanks for reminding me. Chamato, in his anger. So what does he do? The king gets up, bichamato, in his anger, from that word, that little mem, right, is very important. Mimishtahayain, from the drinking party, el ginat habitan. Now, literally, guys, to the garden of the orchard. Wait a minute. There's no verb that said he went anywhere. I asked you before.
He got up.
He got up. What's going on?
Did his mind go somewhere without the rest of him?
Well, you're getting close. Getting very close. Mm-hmm. We're going to need to focus on that. Okay?
Okay.
And then we'll just... So, you know what? There's an etnach, so it's like a semicolon. We'll stop right here. Let's try to get to some of these things. First of all, when it says the king got up in his anger from the party, there's a reason. He was no longer mentally there. Joan was kind of like hinting at that. He was no longer there. He was physically present. Okay? But everything had become a sour mess. Everything was ugly. Okay? He went from happy-go-lucky to miserable. Okay? And, of course, wine is a great help for that, mm-hmm. because alcohol, as we all know, is a depressant. Okay? So he was ready to be depressed. One of the reasons why, probably, Esther invited him again. Because she knew, right, that he'd be weak. So, then we're told, Mimishta Yayin, to indicate that no matter where he was physically, he wasn't there anymore. Now, so much so, we don't even need an active verb to tell us that he got up and he went. Doesn't say v'halach, because in his mind, he's gone. Okay? In his mind, he's gone. Where does he go? He goes into the garden that's in the center of the orchard. Okay. Now, he went, obviously, to calm down. Okay? And potentially, that could have happened. Except... there's a problem. And we're very happy for this problem. You know, in a sense, it really reminds me of Hitler, Yimach Shemo, not listening to his generals and opening up a two-front war, okay, which no one had ever won, let alone going to Russia in the middle of the winter. Okay? So they were almost destined, in quotation marks, to lose... right, the Eastern Front, because they did it at the time when they're still fighting on the Western Front. But be that as it may. So, but Haman made the same kind of strategic blunder. V'Haman amad l'vakesh al nafsho. He stood up, right, to beg for his life. May Esther Hamalka, from Esther the Queen. So, obviously, who has the moxie? Who's got the gravitas? Who's got the power? Clear as day, Esther. Okay, she was approximately a 6th century BCE Jewish Wonder Woman. Ki ra'a, for she saw, sorry, he saw, for he saw, ki halata lava ra'a, for, all right, so evil, you know, was now determined against him. Now, Kalata is like Vayechulu. It had been, right? Vayechulu Hashemai Va'aretz. It was finished. The gig was up. Okay? Me'et HaMelech. Because now, because in other words, Esther couldn't kill, right, Haman. But it's clear to Haman, by the way events were unfolding, that Esther had gotten to the king. So far, so good, guys?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now comes one of the... This would be an amazing thing to see acted out. I can't imagine how amazing this one would be. So anyway, V'hamelech shav meginat abitan. And the king came back, probably not yet sure what he was going to do. El Beit Mishtahayayin. So if we go along with what we said before, he had one leg back in the party. Not sure exactly what he's going to do. Okay? But Haman made probably one of the greatest whoops in all of Tanakh. What does he do? The Haman, no fail. Haman was in the process of falling. Al Hanita, on the bed. Who was on the bed?
His wife, Esther.
Esther. Asher Esther Aleha. Okay, now remember, we're dealing with Achashverosh. Mm-hmm. Achashverosh, let us say, is not psychologically intact on any level. So he walks into the party where everyone had been drinking, and he sees Haman fall, about to fall into the same bed where Esther is.
I'm sorry. There's a party going. Is this a chase lounge? What do you mean?
Yes.
What's a bed?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Oh, that's
yes.
Exactly.
Like Cleopatra.
Oh, okay.
Kind of like,
okay.
Exactly.
Maybe like why we recline on Pesach.
It, right.
To recline to eat.
It's a leftover.
To the left.
Correct.
Okay.
Now, you ready? The king, who, you know, one would gather all together, didn't have a very strong ego strength, okay, immediately thinks that only one thing, and one thing only, is going on.
He
doesn't think he's begging. He thinks he's doing something.
Yeah. Okay, by the way, I'm gonna give you a very strong source for this interpretation. Okay? Vayomar HaMelech Hagam Lich Bosh Et HaMelech Et HaMalka Imi Babayit. Now, what does Lich Bosh mean?
Conquer.
What?
Conquer,
right? As in Sefer Bereishit, V'kiv Shuha, okay? Conquer or subdue, okay? That's in Aleph Chavchet.
Okay. It sounds like seduce to me.
It's
going to seduce her.
Well, seduce is when you have consensual parties.
But he's not his right mind.
So this is not consensual. Rashi says La'anos Bechazaka. He was going to violently rape her. Rashi says
that's what
Achashverosh thought. This was not Beis Yaakov Torah.
Right.
That I know. But that is what Rashi says.
Wow.
The two words again, and I copied them down so I'd have them exactly the right way.
Excuse me, Rashi says Haman was going to rape her, or Rashi says that Achashverosh thought he was going to rape her?
Achashverosh thought, when he says, Agam lichbosh, right? Et amaka, are you going to violently rape the queen? Okay. Imi babayit, and I'm here? Okay? And there's other mafreshim who say the same thing. Okay? Fascinating, right? Now, certainly by this point, I think Haman knows he's not getting any more wine. Okay? Vahadavar yatsa mipi hamelech. And the matter went out from the mouth of the king. Ufnei Haman chafu. And they covered Haman's face. Now, what's going on? So the Malbim has a wonderful archaeological kind of insight here. Okay? He says that it was Everyone familiar with the term social mores? Everyone familiar? Okay, so if I sneeze, what are almost all of you going to say?
La briut.
And if I was not Jewish and I sneezed within earshot, what would you say?
God bless you.
That's a social mores. Mm-hmm. Okay? They don't do that all over the world. They do it in Western European countries. They do it in America. They do it in England, etc., etc., right? So, in Persia, 8th century or 7th century Persia, when someone was embarrassed by the king and everyone knew the king was angry at them, they had a social mores. They'd all go over and cover his face so the king couldn't see the face of the one he was angry with to try to perhaps protect him just a little bit from the king's immediate wrath. In this case, as you all know, it didn't work too well. But that's what it was. That's what the Malbim says. Is that interesting?
Yeah, I thought it was more like ISIS when they behead you and they cover your head.
Oh, he got hung.
Yeah. Oh, he got hung. Now.
So all the people weren't afraid to do that?
What was accepted behavior? It was accepted behavior. For example, when I grew up, it was absolutely I grew up for a couple of years. I went to school in Virginia and stuff. It was unthinkable that you wouldn't hold the door open for a woman. Mm-hmm. Okay?
No.
Unthinkable. I mean, it's just what you did. Mm-hmm. That was a social mores. I don't have to tell you, those of you who have ever traveled to and from New York City, that's not how it's done today.
But there were a lot of people there. I thought it was just like the three of them.
You have a servant.
Think servants. Think of it, it's like a British movie where you've got 87 people on the same floor where the king and the queen are, but they're always standing like a golem. Right? That's what they do. Or, you know, like the queen has to get down so she doesn't get muddy, they step on his back because they don't, you know, and all that kind of stuff. That's what it's like.
But they're so inconsequential, it's not
much. Yeah. Okay? So, this is what's happening, according to Rashi and other Mephoshim. So now comes Charbona. Now, Charbona we met in the previous parak. If you remember, the very, very first pasuk here says what? V'yavo ha-melech ha-aman lishtodi master ha-malka. But remember, Haman was all befuddled. He was all confused at the end of parak Vav. And one of the king's eunuchs who went to, or perhaps princes, it's unclear exactly what he was, by the word Sirisim, because Sirisim could be translated both ways, but either way, he was one of the king's courtiers, right? So Charbona had heard, says the Malbim, the whole discussion going on where Zeresh said to her husband, don't worry about this guy. Okay, you're going to be able to hang him right on the gallows and so forth. So Charbona knew all about it. And that's why he shares this information. Remember, now you and I say knowledge is power in terms of understanding Torah and mitzvot. For some people, knowledge is a strategic advantage that they'll use under all situations. So Charbona obviously wants to be respected and so forth, and there's what happens. Vayomer Charbona, echad min asarisim lifnei hamelech. What did he say? This either eunuch or prince before the king. Gam hine ha'etz. Hey, don't forget, there is a gallows. Asher asa Haman that Haman made. Now, look at this. Look how calculated Charbona is. L'mordechai, asher diber tov, al hamelech. Okay? So he's making sure that this whole thing is really going to change. Okay? To Mordechai, who spoke positively regarding the king. Okay? And the king knows already what besides Mordechai riding on a horse, being led by Haman, and all that. Okay, he also knows that Mordechai was completely, totally loyal. Okay, and that if it was Haman hara, it was Mordechai ha tov. So, and therefore, where is it? Omei bebeit Haman. It's standing there in the house of Haman. Now, obviously, he didn't have it inside the house. What that means is within his property. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure he had one of these, you know, palatial estates. Mm-hmm. Okay, while everybody else, you know, like those of you ever saw the Ten Commandments, like when you were kids, right, on TV. You know, he had all the gazillions and billions of slaves, and then people lived in a palatial way. So, Omei bebeit Haman, gavoa chamisha amah. It's very tall. It's 50 cubits high. And the king, in good Ahasuerus fashion, doesn't stop for a moment. What does he say? Ve'omer ha-melech, Tuluhu alav. Hang him on it. Okay? Happily. Happily. So you see how poorly planned Haman's behavior really was. He just was frightened to death. He didn't think, right? He didn't plan. And I have a strong suspicion that in all likelihood, although this is not written anywhere and I haven't seen it anywhere, when he's about to fall in the bed where Esther is, I have a feeling that Esther may have made it look
like moved over, so like, he fall on her?
Yeah, like something's happening here that, you know, it's not, and it's not clear what's going on. And it was, and it's precisely those kinds of situations that can be what?
Misinterpreted.
Misinterpreted. Misinterpreted. So
she also, I mean, even if she wasn't doing that, I'm sure she was horrified that he, you know, was begging her in that way because she couldn't stand him, right?
About, correct.
He's about to kill all her people and he's asking her for mercy.
Ah, that's Perek Chet. We're going to get to that very, very soon today. So, Pasuk Yud, happy times are here again. Vid lu et Haman al ha'etz. And they hung Haman on the gallows.
And his ten sons.
Well, we're not up to that yet. That happens a little bit later. Asher hechin l'Mordechai, that had been established for Mordechai, set up for Mordechai. Now, v'chamat ha'melech shachacha, and the anger of the king was assuaged. It abated.
Why do you have to say again that it was prepared for Mordechai? You said that in the passage before that.
That's a good question. So, do you have a suggestion? I have a suggestion. I'd like to know if you do. Okay, good, but, well,
pushing the irony,
underlining the miraculous nature of what happened. Here's the second strongest person in the entire kingdom. You remember, we're talking about 127 countries, right? It's unbelievable. And, you know, Haman has... I mean, you can just see him like playing with his gold all day and everything like that.
This is what undid him, is that
correct.
Virulence that he wanted to kill Mordechai.
Correct. Exactly. So, and that's why I think, indeed, to answer your question, I think that's why it's stressed again. Okay? Now, if it was Lahavdil, if it was a story or it was a play, they would do it for dramatic effect. Okay? Also, and Lahavdil going the other way, anything in the Torah, in the Tanakh, in the broad sense, repetition is always emphasis. Always. So that I can tell you. Like, Hocheach tochiach et amitecha. You should surely rebuke your fellow Jew. Why? Then immediately it says thereafter, V'lo tisneh techicha bilvavecha, so that you don't hate your fellow Jew in your heart. Okay, so you really... That's what repetition generally does. But that's very good. Very good question. Thank you. All right. Esther Perek Chet. We're good? We're ready to go on to Chet? Okay. So, we're going to see the Malbim on this first Pasuk because it's so crucial. But let's see what the Pasuk itself says. Yom Ahu, on that day. So what day do you think it is? What day is it probably?
Day before Purim.
Well, actually, no. What was the immediately juxtaposed statement? What was immediately next to it? What's the last thing we saw on Perek Zion?
He's hanging.
On the day of his hanging, B'yom Ahu, Natan HaMelech HaChashverosh, notice again, very formal, HaMelech HaChashverosh, L'Esther HaMalka. Okay? If it would have said L'Esther, I would have known she's HaMalka. If it would have said HaMalka, I would have known it's Esther. Right? But we're being very formal. Why are we being so formal? Because what's happening? Yomahu Natan, on that day the king gave, okay, Beit Haman, Saror HaYehudim, okay, to who? Umor, right? On that day he gave Natan HaMelech HaChashverosh Esther HaMalka, what? Beit Haman. So basically what we have is a formal transfer of property. Now, whoever was present when you bought a house. Anybody here ever present when you bought a house? How many papers did you sign?
About 20.
Right?
A lot. Maybe more.
75, 100.
Again and again.
As if right. We weren't scared enough, right?
Right? And nobody, of course, except your lawyer, which is why you paid him, has any idea what's in any of the documents you're signing. So at first, like a good, intelligent person who went to college, okay, what do you try to do? You try to read the documents. And you read the first three or four or five. And after that, you just say, bring it on, man.
I don't get it anyway, whatever.
Okay. Yeah. Now, what you have here is a formal transfer of property. And that's why it says, HaMelech HaChashverosh, Esther HaMalka. What did Esther get? Beit Haman. Okay. Now, it's very fascinating. We had the word before, Tsar. How is Haman described here? Tsorer. Tsorer means an adversary. Okay? An active enemy. Tsorer HaYehudim. Okay? The enemy, the active adversary of the Jews. Mordechai ba lifnei HaMelech. Now, at this point, Mordechai came before the king. Okay? He had the permission to do so. Why? Ki higida Esther mahu la. Because Esther told the king who he was to her. Now, by the way.
Husband?
I don't think so. I don't think she said, king, by the way, I want you to know there's a medrash and I want to tell you what the medrash says. Right? What did she tell him? She said, have you met my uncle Mordechai? Mm-hmm. Right? Because she was his uncle. He was her uncle, sorry. He was her uncle. So, talked about the family connection. And after all along, what was one of the things that Ahasuerus wanted to find out?
Where she came from.
Right, who she was and so forth. And kept the promise. Okay, and it's Ibn Ezra who says, she told Ahasuerus that Mordechai was her uncle. Shehu doda, that he was her uncle. Okay, now, let's take a look at the Malbim. Malbim sets the stage. I, if you notice, I've been really basically giving you a quick statement from the Malbim, but this is really worthwhile. And then we'll be really set for the whole parak. So you see where it says, Bayom Ahu? Malbi Master Parachet, and it says Aleph. Say Bayom Ahu.
Can you tell I can't see it? Oh, good. It's almost cold. It gets in the world. Okay.
Got it?
Oh, by. Okay.
All right. Bayom Ahu, on that day. Okay. Cool. Now, on the day, as I said before, what? Of who's hanging?
Haman's
food. Right. Couldn't happen soon enough for us. Kevar haya hachok miyemekedem. It was already an ancient law. Ki harugei melech nechseihem lemelech, because those who the king killed, their property went to the king. All right, those of you, even well, watch so now. Though, but you're going to find out why. Mm-hmm. Now, those of you who remember, was it Freddy and the Dreamers? I'm Henry VIII. I am.
Oh yeah.
That's how we got rich in part, right? Now, because I mean, whether or not you remember your British history is irrelevant, but you remember Freddy and the Dreamers. Okay, Vim Haya Haman Neharag, and if Haman was Neharag. Bishvil Shemarad Bamelech. And the truth is, if Haman had rebelled against the king, then what? True! Hayah Beitov and Echasav Magi'im El Hamelech. Then his house and his property would have all gone to the king. Mm-hmm. Says the Malbim, it's only the Malbim could. It's like a Sherlock Holmes of literature here. He says, but to against whom?
The queen.
Against whom did he rebel? The queen, which is why the Pasuk said, who got mm-hmm. Beit Haman? Uh-huh. So isn't that a brilliant analysis? So he says, look what he says. Avah HaMelech Ratzah LaHarot. But the king wanted to show. Shelo Avor Mardu BaMelech Nitla. It wasn't because Haman had rebelled against the king. Rakavur Mashemarad Bahamalka, but only because he had rebelled against the queen, Uba'ama Hayehudim, and against her people. And brilliant analysis. Lechein Natan Beit Haman La Esther Ki Achash Neharag. Now this word should get stars next to it in the Malbim. Ki Achash Neharag Bish Fila. After Haman was killed on Esther's account, then Nechasaf Magiim El Hamalka, then everything that he had went to the queen. Now, you ready? We talked before about Sarur, and I told you about the relationship between Sarur and Sar. Look at the Malbim. He says it so beautifully. V'lechein Karupo. Therefore, Haman is called here Tzorer HaYehudim, the adversary of the Jews, Legalot HaTa'am, to reveal the reason, Shelechein Natan Beit Haman LaEsther, to explain exactly why, right, Beit Haman went to Esther. Ya'an She HaRigato Haya Al Shehayat Tzorer HaYehudim. The reason why he died is because he was the adversary of the Jews. Mm-hmm. The queen was Jewish, and therefore she would have got caught up in the tsunami of death and destruction. Mm-hmm. By this point, remember, the queen is very beloved by Ahasuerus. Mm-hmm. Okay, especially because she came before him, right, voluntarily. So at this point, There was nothing that was going to stand between Ahasuerus and the queen, at least from Ahasuerus's perspective. Okay? So we're not going to do the whole Malbim. So basically, what we're going to do next week, we're going to continue, and we're going to see change after change after change. And you know what? It's in Perek Tet. We're not there yet, but Halavai Amen, this will be a week that the words that we say in Havdalah come true. The Adina Yata Ora Visumcha Visasam Kane Yeah. Okay? All right. Thank you all.